Everything that has transpired has done so according to my design. Your friends, listening to other podcasts, are walking into a trap, as is the Rebel fleet. It was I who allowed the Alliance to think that the Punk News podcast was down. It is quite safe from your pitiful little band. An entire legion of my best troops await them. Oh, I'm afraid the deflector shield will be quite operational when your friends arrive. Now witness the power, young Skywalker, of the fully operational Punk News podcast. Commander, fire at will. Rejiggering the back end, hopping up the engine, you know, putting some twin turbo engines in there, you know, putting in an injection system. We're ready to roll. 793 horsepower of Punk News Podcast, ready to rip your head off. Hallie Bullen, how's it feel to have the Punk News Podcast fully in our hands? Engines ready to roar at our will. No middleman, nothing in our way. Just me, Hallie, Sam, and Moore ready to fire up the Punk News Podcast. At will. How's it feel? How's it feel, Hallie? Are you psyched?
Do I have to respond in that voice? It feels great. It feels great, John. John, it feels so great. Right now, cut out the middleman. That's what everyone says. Cut out the middleman. Dude, do your shit. Do your shit. I'm into it. Em, how are you feeling? Do you want to try to emulate that voice that Sean was speaking in?
Woo! I'm so red. I can't do it. I don't know what that was. Oh God,
that was amazing.
And more. Has there ever been a point in your life where you were sorry that you cut out the middleman? Have you ever said, "Man, I wish the middleman was still there"?
You know what? No, actually, maybe once. It was I was buying something from someone, and it was a friend of a friend, and then the friend didn't show up, and it was really uncomfortable because the other person was very strange.
This is like a weird scenario. What were you buying? It was like a friend of a friend, and the friend didn't show up, and it was a weird. Like, what were you buying exactly, Em?
It's like a McDonald's collectible thing. I have it on my desk. It's a little nugget.
Yeah. The unseemly world of McDonald's collectibles. Hallie, yeah. I mean, I'm sure, I think we need to have an intervention with M. Hallie, I'm sure you've had many friends that have gotten too deep into McDonald's collectible worlds, and there's just no pulling them back, you know? Once you're in Mary McCheese world, there's no way out, you know?
I mean, my relationships with those people fell apart, you know, once they went too far down that rabbit hole. So I can't even say, how do you salvage a relationship with someone that's gone this far?
But I mean, like, can we help Em before she wants to help herself? Or does she have to hit fry bottom, you know? And
I don't know, man. Em, you mean a lot to me. I'm just hoping we can, like, pull you back from the brink.
You know, Hallie and Em, but Hallie will be able to relate more with me than Em would, is McDonaldland is essentially shut down these days. Like, they don't really have the little fry guys anymore. Maybe you see Grimace once every 3 years. Even Ronald is kind of put out the pasture. Do you miss the McDonald's land characters, or is it good that they've executed these animals whose sole purpose is to put unhealthy food in the stomachs of children?
I always found them pretty creepy as a child. They weren't really helping, like, sell me on McDonald's. Like, I found them like, I found them creepy. did children like them? Like the Hamburglar? What was that? No. I don't think I was into any of those characters.
And more, do you miss the McDonaldland's characters? I thought the Hamburglar was hilarious because he would do armed robberies for hamburgers, which you could buy for 99 cents. So, seems like a bad plan, you know what I mean?
But what was he like, not, he wouldn't talk. He'd just be like,
robble, robble,
like, really,
robble, robble. Robble, robble.
Robble, robble. I knew it was kind of just like indecipherable noises. Yeah, no, I don't think I was into that.
But I think that's because he was stripping on PCP, and that's why he needed money so badly to buy more PCP. You know.
You gave him a backstory. I love this.
Yes.
Well, listen, we don't have time to waste on this podcast. We've got music to talk about. Before we talk about that, we have to talk about Spring Slam Down 2 and who was at Spring Slam Down 2. Spring Slam Down 2 followed Spring Slam Down 1, which was about 4 years ago now. Maybe five or four. Four, I think. Spring Slam Down 1 was, let me see if I can recall, Jade of Poser's first solo show. Now she's Abby Hughes. It was Up Up Ups, which was Catbite before they were Catbite. It was Crazy in the Brains and Drew Getz, and it was a killer show. And then for Spring Slam Down 2, Philippa of Roadkiller asked if I could help her do a Bow of the Bands. And I said yes, but we got to have two cool headliners. And so the Bow of the Bands itself was Under 95, which was like a skate punk band. It was Burn in the Bastards, which was kind of a pop punk band. The Amorphous Blob Orchestra, which is kind of like a World Inferno type-ish band. Or folk punk band, maybe, and Brazen Hell, which was kind of like a Motorhead band. And the headliners were Rodney Anonymous, the Seventh Victim, and the Mike Yerg band. And the show was pretty cool. Under 95 was real. We set the whole stage up like a boxing ring. I put like streamers across the front of the stage. It looked like ropes. And in the background was like a box, like the inside of a boxing ring. I made little boxing, what do you call it, programs that had all the different bands. And it had like, I'll just read a couple here. Like inside it'd say like the Mikey Erg Band. Pop punk titans come to prove themselves in the city of brotherly love. Can these young upstarts show the legends who was boss? Hometown, Astoria, New York. Jim, rad girlfriend. Professional record 69-0-0. Fight analyst Ruben Hall says, this will be a long-distance match, but Mikey Erg Band are versatile and train constantly. The Rumble Strip Hook takes the win in the final round. Meanwhile, Seven Victims said, local legends look to defend their ground. Will their odd style razzle and dazzle? Hometown Philadelphia PA, Jim Giallo Brothers, professional record 77-0. Fight analyst Mark Robson says, this will be a popper in the West Poplar, but Seven Victim knows the arena all too well, and they are harder than ever. Rodney and Janet will make the Mikey Erg Band victim number 8 at the final bell. And so we had a little knockout. The knockout actually was a boxing program from like the 20s to like the 70s. So I remade the knockout. The skate punk band Under 95 was real cool. They had like skateboards and they jumped up on stage and skateboarded during their set. Burn in the Bastards was a cool pop punk band. Amorphous Blob Orchestra was cool. The winners were Brazen Hell. We had three judges, Philippa, Rodney, and guy from 93.3 WMMR. Brazen Hell won, which actually kind of annoyed me because they were kind of dicks. And they were mad that I called them a metal band in the program, but they're actually like a Motorhead type band, so they were like insulting me from the stage. And I'm like, well, you don't have any social media. And also, I gotta say, I think the Mikey Erg Band and Rodney, I think, thought the boxing theme was hilarious with the fake ropes. The Bow of the Band bands didn't seem to like it. I think they seemed to think maybe it was too theatrical or whatever. And I was hoping that, in Spring Slam Down 1, started off with Jade. She ran up to the stage, rolled under the ropes like a box, like a pro wrestler, started her set, and then she jumped through the ropes and snapped them halfway through her set, which was cool. So I thought the bands would do that again this time. But they were all, like, very careful not to damage the ropes, which I appreciate that they thought, like, oh, well, John put up these ropes. He doesn't want us to hurt his set. When I was hoping that they would, like, destroy the set because that looks cool. But, you know, I guess I should have articulated that, you know. So we gave away trophies, and then the win, and then the head-to-head match was Seventh Victim. Seventh Victim was awesome. They do kind of like, I call it warp synth punk. It's really probably closer to industrial, but really it reminds me of the Screamers. And on CD and digital, they're pretty cool. But live, Seventh Victim, which is Ronnie the Dead Milkman, playing like a whacked out keyboard and Janet Bresler singing. It was like actually like pretty, it was like really awesome. It was aggressive, weird, and very punk if you ask me. Then the last act was the Mikey Erg Band. I've seen Mikey Erg before. Mikey Erg is great. But the Mikey Erg Band is amazing. Like Mikey Erg should be a rock star. Like he's doing these moves, but they don't like when Dave Grohl does moves, but it seems like orchestrated. Like Mikey Erg is doing like rock star type moves, like jumps and stuff. But it doesn't seem it just seems like that's what's like just jumping out of him at that time, you know. And they closed out the set, and I gotta say the Mikey Erg Band is fantastic. I mean I know Mikey Erg has a fan base, but man, I feel like he should be like really famous.
I mean, I feel like for punk, I don't know. I feel like, whatever. There's famous, right? Which, and then there's like punk famous.
Yeah.
I feel like Mikey is like fairly close to being punk famous, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but
maybe
I
not
mean,
for his solo stuff. I see, I think what you're, yeah, like, as a front man, up front, playing guitar, doing like this stuff. Yeah, I think maybe he's not as well known for that. And you're right, he like crushes it.
I mean, he's better than Dave Grohl, that's all I'm saying. So why is Dave Grohl? No.
Well, I just need to point out that that was 2/4 of the Unlovables that you were watching right there.
That's right.
Yeah. Fizz. Yes. Is also in the Unlovables. Those are my bros. Those are my guys.
Well, they rocked it, and it was a fun was had all around. But that means the next show is finally announced. Coming up, July 2, Philadelphia, Philomoka, Summer, Soiree 5, Headliners, the Joe Jack Talcum Band / Dan Jomar, which is Joe Jack Talcum and Dan of Dead Milkmen and Marshall Fisher doing Dead Milkmen and Joe solo tracks and some covers and some other stuff, and they are awesome. Also, the Marissa Paternoster Band, Marissa of Screaming Females, of course, Angie Boulin of Sleater-Kinney, and Shanna Polly of Snake Finger. Not Snake Finger, Snake Skin. Snake Fingers from The Residents, of course. Doing brand new stuff, and they are awesome. And three co-tiered bands. We've got Froggy, we talk about Froggy on the podcast because they're awesome. Vixen 77 back in their new form. And not the first show, but one of the first shows of At Night, which is Nicole of Witch Hunt, which was a famous, well-respected late 90s, early 2000s hardcore band, and At Night is kind of post-punk and gothy, and I've heard two tracks, and it's very cool. I don't know if this is going to be my last show I throw. I'm feeling like it might be, and I've got special, at least one, I'll say, I have at least one special thing planned for every set. Some of the sets have two or even three special things planned, so it's going to be, every idea that I have in the chamber that I can do, I've got a couple ideas that I can't do because they're like their own thing. But every idea that I have just happened at a show sometime, I'm pulling out. So this is going to be the jammer. I might even bring down my two cousins to help me out because we got a lot of stuff to do. But we're also going to be doing Punk's Points, which is the punk news game show between sets 3 and 4, which is going to be a lot of fun. And everybody that comes is going to get a goodie bag. We've talked about the goodie bags a little bit. You get an LP. You get a 7-inch that have been picked by me. There's some cool stickers and stuff in there. There's some candy in there. And two other very special gifts, which is going to be very cool, in the goodie bags. And listen, this is going to be the one, people. If you're going to come to a punk news show, the July 2nd with Joe Jack Talcum and Marissa Paternoster Band in Philly, this is going to be the one. That's what I'm saying.
That sounds amazing. I mean, it's a lot. You're giving people a lot. Like, are you sorry to talk shop, but like, are you losing money on this show? Like,
how? Yeah, I'm losing money on this show.
You gotta be losing so much money. You're giving people so much for their money. Like, how much are the tickets?
Tickets are only $12.
Sean, that's why you're great. Right there, in a nutshell. You're gonna put all these bands together, put a great show together, and then you're going to, like, give people all this shit. Like, just the goodie bag alone is probably worth more than $12.
Oh, it is.
Like, you haven't even started, like, paying for the bands. Oh, that's, I like that. I love that. That's fucking punk, man.
I did have a rash. If you guys remember, I was having a great deal of existential angst about how every time I try to throw a show for Joe Jack Talcum, it always goes bad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I felt really bad about that. And like, the very cool thing about Joe, I mean, with the last show that got canceled, I was very frustrated for a number of reasons. And this one, knock on wood, just been a dream so far. And the reason is because I'm working with Joe and Marissa, who are just, I was missing throwing shows for World Inferno, and one of the main reasons is, A, World Inferno was, the best band ever, but also, World Inferno, do you want to come play a show in Philadelphia? Yes. How much money do you want? XYZ. Okay, I will give you XYZ. Will you come down? And it's done. And it's on. And what's beautiful about Joe and Marissa is same exact conversation. Joe, do you want to play a show? Yes. How much money do you want, Joe? Oh, I haven't thought that through. Do you want XYZ? Okay, XYZ is fine. And then and Marissa, you know, Marissa makes her living from music, so Marissa was like, we want XYZ, which was extremely reasonable. So I said, okay, XYZ it is, you know. And so the point being is, I've been having extreme existential angst over Joe and not showing him enough like, I guess, respect. But then I realized, I said how this escaped my mental Joe is in the Dead Milkmen, and they will sell out a 2,500-seater before the show. So it's like Joe knows he's the man. And so he doesn't need like Joe really like Joe is like it's like I don't want to say weird, but like Joe like some band will be like, we need to play last, or you know, we need this for a rider. Like I've done, I guess, 3 shows with Joe now, and he shows up before everyone else, and he's like, I'm here when you want me to play. And he, like, you could say first or last, or like, he really doesn't care. And that I don't know if that's because he's extremely confident but not cocky, or if he really is extremely humble, I guess. The question is he extremely humble or extremely confident? Because Joe's a punk rock. I mean, if you ask me, the Dead Milkmen should be spoken along the same lines of Black Flag and Circle Jerks and Ramones and whoever else. And I think the reason that they aren't is because there was no major drama or no breakup. Instead of self-destructing in the mid-80s, the Dead Milkmen kept putting out cool music and kept doing their thing till the 90s, you know. So I think maybe the Dead Milkmen would be a little bit higher on the punk can, if you will, if there was some kind of weird drama. But the problem is, they're 4 nice people, you know. So 4 nice people, they just don't have, there really is no drama with the Dead Milkmen. And I mean, I know that for a fact. And so Dead Milkmen certainly are respected, but I don't know if they're given quite the legendary status they should be. And so it's so funny that bands that are just getting started or bands that never made it give me so much more grief than Joe Jack Talcum, the guy that wrote Punk Rock Girl, the guy that wrote Methodist Punk Book. Like, he's like, it's like, all right, band set up from 5 to 7. I actually give bands the schedule months ahead of time, but I'm like, you know, from 5 to 7, and then Joe, you're on at 10:30. Joe will show up at 5 with his acoustic guitar, and like, here I am. I remember one time I had Joe and Sturgeon headline a show, co-headline a show, and Joe brought his friend, and he's like, and he was like really shy about it. He's like, I forget, her name was like Jill or something, and he's like, can my friend Jill have a plus one? I'm like, yes, Joe, who's headlining my show, you can have a plus one. Like, he was like so shy about asking for a plus one, even though he's co-headlining the show, you know. Anyway, the point, I don't know if I got there. The point I was trying to make is I've been fretting about making sure Joe gets enough respect, but I think Joe doesn't need to demand respect because he knows inherently he already has the respect, maybe. You know, so maybe I've been fretting for 3 years for naught, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like he's not hanging his identity or self-worth on, like, yeah.
You know,
like,
but
how his set at the show you're putting on goes. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like Joe isn't using me as a barometer of whether or not he's being successful.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Not. Which shows my own vanity, if you will. At any rate, Joe is headlining. It's an electric set. It's going to be friggin' awesome. And I will say, Joe's an angel. And I do represent some bands, and I stress this to bands. Bands that have their shit together, just because you have your shit together doesn't mean you're going to make it. But if you don't have your shit together, you're not going to make it. And Joe Jack Talcum and the rest of Dead Milkmen, they have their shit together. You know, we had a New Year's Eve show. It fell apart. And I said, Joe, do you want to play this July? Do you want to play this summer show? And if you're not, that's fine. I understand. But if you do, we'd love to have you. And he said, yes, here are my dates. And then I took my dates to Marissa. I said, Marissa, here are the dates we have open. Would you like to play? And then we found the two dates that work between them. And bada bing, bada boom, that was it. Like back and forth maybe three times total. You know what I mean? The point being is bands that answer emails and have their shit together, if you want to make it, you have to have your shit together and you have to be kind of cool. And if you don't have your shit together, then you're just not going to make it. I'm sorry.
You think that's true? I don't think that's true.
What band doesn't have their shit together do you think like has made it?
The Replacements? Yeah. I mean, that to me is like that they were like completely wheels off the entire time they were a band. And I would say they definitely made it. I mean, I think that's just one band off the top of my head. I feel like I know and have played with bands that are doing just fine, but like definitely don't have their shit together. I mean, it helps. But if you're good, I think you do fine, even if you're like a disaster.
See, I would put Replacements in the category of Leftover Crack in that they could have been the Bouncing Souls or even bigger, but because they were so self-destructive, they did self-destruct, and I would put the Replacements in that category. I would say Replacements could still be doing the Foo Fighters thing now, but they self-destructed.
Yeah, definitely, but I don't think you can say they didn't make it prior to that, you know?
Okay, well, then I'll say perhaps excel to your fullest, most potential, if you will.
Sure, yeah, definitely. That I would agree with.
Well, there you have it. At any rate, Summer's War A5. Maybe the last one. I don't know. July 2, Philadelphia. So, yeah, I'm psyched. Hallie might be there and more might be there.
Yeah.
Some other special guests might be there. And, yeah, it's going to be rad. $12. Yeah. Tickets in Eventbrite. So let's play a song. Who's going to play a song? Was it Hallie? You were going to play a song, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you know, anyone that knows me knows I'm a huge fan of Recess Records and, like, pretty much everything that label puts out. And, so, like, there hasn't been, like, a ton coming out on that label lately, but, you know, Todd Congelier, who runs the label, always put out his own stuff on the label, and he's, you know, always making music and always playing in cool bands. So, he's got, like, put out a new thing in February. The project is Clown Sounds, which I guess used to be, like, his solo project, but he, now it's, I think, for a couple of years now, it's been like an actual band. So yeah, there's like a new album out called Born Under a Bad Sigh. And, I like this whole record really, but, I don't know. I guess I'll play, this track is, Class Fall.
Same shit, last call. Waiting takes a ride.
Doing Born Under a Bad Sigh. influence on cover, at least by Albert King, Born Under a Bad Sign. Very cool cover. Okay, let us hit in this week's news. And, here's a shocker. Bauhaus has released their first new song in 14 years. The song is called Drink the New Wine, and it was done in an exquisite corpse-type fashion in which each member – I mean, it's a little more complicated than this. Each member wrote their part separately without knowing what the other member was going to do, and then at the end they kind of merged several sections together to make a avant-garde-type musical piece. And in fact, Bauhaus has done this at least twice before. There actually is a song called Exquisite Corpse, which was done in that fashion, and you can find those on the B-sides to their 12-inch singles. This kind of came out of nowhere, and it is coincides with a bunch of reunion shows. I think Bauhaus has played some reunion shows, but most of them were delayed by COVID. I am going to the September 8th show in New York, and I think it's actually Brooklyn, King's Theater, I think. Brooklyn?
Yeah. King's Theater's in Brooklyn, yeah.
And so anyways, I'm extremely excited for this tour. And I have very strong thoughts about the song. Emmer, how do you want to kick it off? You want me to kick off my thoughts about the song?
No, you kick it off.
Yeah, so anyways, so Bauhaus is an amazing band. All the original Bauhaus albums are amazing. And actually the reunion album from like 20 years ago now, Go Away White, is also very good. Bauhaus doesn't make bad. There's no bad Bauhaus songs. Bauhaus songs range from really good to amazingly good. And I think strategically, this was maybe the right choice. The song itself is—it's not really even a song; it's an experiment. And it's like here's a riff and a sound, and here's another riff and a sound, and it's not a song; it's a collection of collages, if you will. And I thought what was cool is one of the reasons that Bauhaus has always risen above their contemporaries is because their goth contemporaries just do goth. Their post-punk contemporaries just do post-punk to the point where it's just not listenable. What's cool about Bauhaus is Bauhaus has never been afraid to go full-on experimental, which they've done multiple times, particularly on their 12-inch singles. So, and also, Bauhaus's first song in 14 years, there's a lot of weight riding on that. If they just came out with a standard song and it was pretty good, people are like, eh, it's a new Bauhaus song. And it kind of takes – actually, that's – remember Guns N' Roses put out like a song and it was just like – kind of bad, and it's like, well, who cares? So by putting out an abstract song that isn't really even a song, you could argue that it's kind of wimpy, that they're not taking the dare, the double dare, if you will. However, you could also argue, well, it's them kind of subverting expectations and also making a strategic strike in that their first new music is just something that's totally whacked out, and you can't judge it as a song because it's not really a song. So I dig that they did it, and I think it's cool that they did this. I'm not going to, like, listen to this on repeat, but I thought it was a cool artistic statement. What I would say, what's frustrating to me, what's frustrating about this is listening to this song, there's, like, four skeletons for, like, four amazing Bauhaus songs. Like, even the opening intro, I'm like, holy shit, this is, like, classic flat feet in the flat field era Bauhaus. Like, there's so much amazing skeleton here. I kind of wish they would put their petty bullshit aside and say, fine, we hate each other because we're a bunch of weirdos and freaks, and some of us are really freaky. And if you heard some of the inside stories, some of us are really, really, really freaky. But if we can put all that aside, and say, listen, you know, we've got Daniel Ash has got a great riff. Peter's got a great line. Let's just put our bullshit aside because we're making money on the tour. So let's say, listen, we might not like each other, but we all like Bauhaus. So let's put it together and make an incredible song. The same thing can be said of Rancid. All the guys in Rancid have kind of good separate projects, but not amazing. If they put all their heads together, there's amazing music there. Here, there's a lot of amazing sketches, but they're all sketches. And I kind of wish they would sit down and say, we still got the magic, so let's just put a little bit of effort in and make something extremely cool. That's my perspective. Hallie, what's your stance?
Yeah, I just like I'm all for experimentation, and I thought like the story of this song is great, like really, really compelling to be like, oh man, like that's how they created this. But then like listening to it, I just didn't really care. It just wasn't, as like you said, it just like wasn't really a song. And I thought it was really interesting when I was like sort of trying to just look and see like what just the general reaction had been to this song. It's like, no, it was really made me laugh because I felt like everyone that wrote about it basically just wrote that it had been released. Like, no one was really expressing an opinion about it. I think it's because Bauhaus is so beloved and no one wants to say anything bad about Bauhaus. But I think also just everyone listened to this and was like, okay, like, well, that's like, I don't even know how to say anything good or bad about this because it's just sort of like a, it's like a sound, it's like a sound sculpture or something, you know, right? Like, it's not, to me, it just like wasn't a song. So it wasn't very interesting to me, but I, you know, I'm always glad, as you know, to see people making art, doing cool, weird shit. I mean, it's a hell of a way to write a song, but you're also listening to it and you're like, but it could have been so much better if you just like listened to what the other people were writing and like tried to add to that. Like what, like, you know, maybe you could have like a happy accident where you could write a song this way and it could just be like mind blowing and everything just magically comes together. But like, I didn't feel like that totally happened here. I don't know. And what did you think?
I really liked it. It was really good. And yeah, like the way that they wrote it and stuff, like the exquisite corpse thing, like that's so cool. And to have it all kind of gel, because I thought it went, like it flowed really well with the story and with, or not with this, yeah, like the lyrics all kind of formed the story together. Like everything was connected in a way. So I really liked it. I thought it was cool. I've listened to it multiple times because it's just like, it's so good. It's like, it's a, like it's enveloping, like, you know, like you listen to it and then it's just like everything else tunes out and you're just in the song and you're focusing on it and you're trying to figure out how everything's connected and stuff. It's like a puzzle, but really good. So I was a big fan of this and I really want them to release more music.
Do you think they will, or do you think this is just kind of like in the 2020s, if you will, a lot of legacy bands will get together, like, let's write one song really just to promote the tour. Do you think they're going to do more stuff, or do you think this is just kind of a tour throwaway?
I really hope they do more stuff. But I kind of have a feeling like it might be a tour throwaway. But again, I hope it's not, because like that would be such a shame, because there's so much going on and there's so much like that they can do, and you know. So maybe the tour will spark something and they'll be like, yes, we must create all together again. You know, I'm hoping for that.
I think we all are. Here's something that was equally divisive. Hyper-Ska artist Eichlers have released a new song. The song is called Buddy Icon and features Jer of Ska 2 Network. And Jer's also in We Are the Union. The new song by Eichlers, Buddy Icon, is off My Checker Future. That's out March 25 via Bad Time Records. And literally as we speak on Twitter, Eichlers posted about the Punk News comments, which were negative, very negative. And so the Ska fan base on Twitter is attacking Punk News, which I understand. I'm not annoyed by that because like for years and years, we used to, I mean, Frank Turner would get bad reviews at Punk News. Now he gets all good reviews, but he used to get bad reviews. And he would like diss on Punk News. And that didn't bother me because I like, if I was Frank Turner, I'd be annoyed too. Now, John G doesn't like Frank Turner's music, so he's not going to say he does. But if I was Frank Turner and some website is giving bad reviews, I would be annoyed and I would be justified in attacking them. So literally as we speak, Ska, Twitter, and Eichlers are kind of attacking on Punk News. And I will say the commenters in this article are not some of our finest breed. They're more the put in a sack and throw in the river type commenters. So that's what's happening right now. The criticism that Eichlers is having of the Punk News commenters is that they're all strange, slow, and old and don't get it. Hallie Bullitt, what did you think of Eichler's new track, Buddy Icon?
I liked it. I don't know what hyper ska is. And, like, I was like, when you Google hyper ska, like, all that comes up is, like, this band. So, like, clearly they've, like, invented a genre for themselves. But I liked it. But, I didn't love the, like, the auto-tune, like, share, like robot voice. Yeah. But I just, but that's just not my aesthetic. I don't like the robot voice. But I felt like if it wasn't for the robot vocals, I would have liked this. I like it had like kind of a slower. I don't know. I felt like it was like reggae meets something really, really, really poppy. Like a new, very modern kind of pop. And I like both of those things. So I did not mind this a bit. I thought the comments were so rough and so crazy. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, John, but like, I do feel like, we've talked about it before, and I know you have a good reason, but like when I read threads like this, I am just sort of like, why don't you just turn off the comments? It's just like always seems to be the same kind of dude.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's never like, it's so rarely like a productive conversation, you know?
I mean, honestly, like, is it ever a productive conversation in the comment section anymore? Ever? Like, ever? Yeah. Almost no, you know.
I mean, if you post that like Gaslight Anthem is doing something, then people will get excited and it'll be positive and people will be like, you know, but it's like very, it's such a slim, like corridor of bands that get that kind of reaction from these people, you know?
But even if Gaslight Anthem was the comment would just be like, yeah, Gaslight Anthem rules. Yeah, I've been waiting years for this. Like, not even an intelligent discussion. You know what I mean?
No, you're right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It'd be kind of like over praise and just kind of dumb praise in the opposite direction, right?
Yeah.
but yeah, I don't know. I like this. But did you guys like it? Or, I mean, I guess you can have not liked it and still have like a more nuanced take on it than the commenters did.
here's my nuanced take, and I'm torn. Is, you know, I've complained many times about how annoying I hate the most of our readers. Almost all of our readers are cool.
Yeah.
The majority of the commenters are actually cool, but the ones that comment the most are shitheads. And I can't stand them. And so I'm torn here because usually whatever upsets them makes me happy. You know, like when we post about Code Hangers or Surfport and they get all upset, I love it. Because I know Code Hangers are right. I know Surfport is right. I know the M. Moore bands are right.
Woo!
You know? But here, I am not a fan of this at all. And I think it's really bad. And so I agree with the perspective of the shithead commenters, but I would never make it a point to say this. You know, the worst thing is if you hate it and you come up with a dumb, snarky comment that's not even that clever, but like that seems to be like the most annoying thing for some reason. And like why do you feel the need to post that? You know. But that being said, I'm going to be objective here. Bad Time Records, great record label. This is just not for me, and maybe it's not meant for me. You know, it's the reason this is not meant for me is because I've never felt the way the person feels in this song, in that it's like when the Coat Hangers talk about their problems, I want to know, I care about their problems. You know, what's going on and what's the adventure? When Nick Blinko is talking about being in a mental institution and thinking he's Pope Adrian IV and a woman, even though Pope Adrian IV was a man, I want to know why does Nick Blinko think that, you know? When Danny Miller talks about getting over drugs, I want to know how she got over drugs. When Sturgeon Scissor Crack talks about being on drugs, I want to know why is Sturgeon on drugs and why does he feel that way. This just sounds like suburban radio music about some guy in suburbia reflecting melancholy back on his high school years and he's unsure of where he wants to be in life. And that's what that says to me. And I'm just not interested in it at all. And for me, the best parts of punk are, is it dangerous or is it totally weird or is it political? This is none of those things. That being said, I like that he's making his own genre. It's not meant for me, I don't think. So maybe it's useful to someone else, but it's not useful to me. And it's not thrilling to me. But that being said, that doesn't mean the guy should be get like, at least he's trying, you know, and at least he's doing something some people care about. And the shithead commenters have never done anything in their life ever that anyone ever cares about. They all work either service jobs or a lot of them actually work in education, which is like freaky, or social work, which is freaky. It's like if you were working in social work and a teacher, you think you'd have some sort of empathy and caring, but they're extremely nasty. So I mean, that, you know. So the point being is, like, we really shouldn't develop. So maybe we should nuke the comments because I don't know if it has any real importance anymore. And I hate giving these shitheads a platform, but I do believe in freedom of speech. But of course, freedom of speech is only government interference, John. Yes, I understand that. But you get what I'm saying. I like giving people a platform to express their opinion. But what do we do when the loudest shitheads rise above the rest? I didn't like this song. I don't feel the way – this song doesn't speak to me. I don't care about the guy's problems. But I like Bad Time Records a lot. And maybe he's speaking to someone else. Maybe it means something to them. And that's my honest opinion. And I am – the older I get, the more I am at this juncture. It's like I really don't like something, but I don't necessarily want to diss on it because it seems like the person is trying in earnest. But then if I just say everything's good, then is my opinion even interesting at all? You know what I mean? You kind of have to have – in order to have good opinions, you have to have negative opinions too, you know? And so I guess the older I get, the less I want to beat down on stuff I don't like, but I still want to give my opinion, and that's contradictory. And more. It's not my problem.
More ska. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite song by Eichlers. Like, they released some other stuff like that we've covered on Punk News. 99 Resolutions is, I really like that song. And the first one that was released, which was Things You See in Me. I liked that song too. This song wasn't my favorite just cause, I don't know, it bummed me out. Like, it was just kinda, I don't know, sad. But it was, like, the music's really happy, but the lyrics just, I don't know, the whole thing just kinda threw me off a little bit. I like Jer's part. I thought that was really good. But, yeah, John, when you're saying the thing about the Twitter, I looked it up and it's like, that's not fair. Like, you know, just, it's frustrating when these people are what, or I mean, like the commenters, the really nasty commenters are what people associate with Punk News. And then, you know, it's like, you know, then people have that idea of like, oh, that's what Punk News is. And, you know, don't really kind of see what, like, all the good stuff, and it's just, yeah, it's this place, you know, and that really, really bothers me. So.
Yeah, you're right. And what's
it's just frustrating.
What's frustrating about the shithead commenters is that they're so close to anything that's not loser bearded punk, you know what I mean? And it's getting very tiring at this point. Yeah, fine. Go ahead, Em.
No, sorry, go ahead.
It's like, yeah, you like hot water music, fine, but that doesn't mean you can't like stuff that's not hot water music, you know what I mean? And it really is frustrating at how close-minded the shithead commenters are. It's like, and I know the exact reason why. The exact reason why is because the prime of their life was 2005 to 2012. Yeah. That era is over, you know. The dream that they had didn't come true because they spent too much time hanging out with friends and drinking whiskey at 4 a.m. on Saturday instead of trying to do something interesting creatively. And so now they're working their service job or they're, and I'm not dissing service. Technically I have a service job, you know, but I'm not dissing a service job that they don't like doing is what I should say, or the social work job that they don't really love or whatever, they feel burnt out by. And they're not 25 anymore and having fun with friends. They're 38 and 40, and they're either married and, you know, or they're not married and they're not real happy with where they are in life. And, you know, their favorite bands are getting older, and they realize they're getting older, and they realize their own mortality. So things like Hyper Ska comes along, and it points out to them that your time as a young person and directing the arts is over. And now there's a new crop of young people that are now controlling the arts, and you're kind of irrelevant.
And you're, like, so threatened by that.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, so threatened. I mean, the thing that bums me out is just, like, that they do kind of dominate. I mean, they really define what the conversation is, you know, with each article. And honestly, I feel like anyone with a a differing opinion, I think, would be very reluctant to comment on there because you're like, oh man, like, this is the tone of this conversation. Like, what's going to be, like, what kind of shitstorm is going to come down on me if I post, like, a differing opinion? You know what I mean? I just think it's like, it is sort of, I don't even know if it's freedom of speech anymore, because I don't think that a lot of people would feel free to comment on threads like that, you know?
And I don't know, I don't think we have the answer for this, but why is it that the shitheads have way more energy to be shitheads than non-shitheads have to fight back?
They have more time on their hands.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, you know, and they can sit in front of, like, the punk news, like, article screen all day and just be like, oh, did anyone reply to me, you know, and everything. It's absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know, and then people, well, I know, like, I don't want to get involved with it because it's like, I don't want to feed the trolls, you know, I don't want to deal with that just because I have other stuff going on that I'd rather be doing than dealing with them. But it's getting to the point where it's like, okay, well, you know, I kind of want to jump in certain areas and just be like, just shut the fuck up, you know?
And don't follow my path. Follow the path of Dan Barrett. Stay out.
Yeah,
I would agree. Because, and you, like, you're contributing your opinions and your taste, and you're contributing all of that stuff in such a positive way on the website. And, like, why would you waste your time with anything else, you know? You could be writing, like, another great article or interviewing another cool band or, you know?
Yeah.
And just take solace in that your articles upset them, and that means you're winning. So you already won. So why engage?
Yeah, it's true.
As with everything, I will make this about me. And honestly, after taking shots for 15 years, it pretty much does just bounce off my skin. Every once in a while, it gets a little bit under the skin, but not really. But, I announced the Joe Jack Talcum Mercer Paternoster show, and there was like 7 to 10 negative comments. And it's like, how can you possibly criticize a $12 show with the Joe Jack Talcum band, not even Joe Jack Talcum, the solo, the Joe Jack Talcum band, the Mercer Paternoster? Like, what's there to criticize? Like, that's awesome. You know what I mean? It's like, what have you done? Asshole. You know. Icarus, keep doing your thing. You know.
Yeah.
Keep doing your thing, Icarus.
I really liked it. I'm not even just saying that to be contrary. I don't know. I think I have, like, I'll listen to Z100. Like, if, you know, and then I'll turn, and then if I don't like what they're playing, I'll listen to WFMU and they'll be playing something totally subversive and, like, not pop at all. So it's like, I have, like, a very, very large spectrum of things that are, like, pleasing to me. And this just checked some boxes for me of things that I like. And the only box I just wanted to, like, the only thing I wanted to take out was that fucking robot voice. I've never been able to totally get on board with that. I don't know, maybe. I don't know. Is there any artist that does that in a way that I like?
Do you like T-Pain? Do you like Cher? Do you like Cher?
I mean, no, I didn't like it at all when Cher did it. I hated that song. First of all, that song just sucks. I mean, the robot voice is, like, the least of that song's problems. But
how about Kraftwerk? Do you like when Kraftwerk gives robot voices?
Yeah. So it's definitely, like, it can be done. I didn't want to hear it in this context. It wasn't working for me. But I liked so many other things about it.
Here's something that a lot of people like. The Chats, they have released a new single called Struck by Lightning. Word is there's going to be a new Chats album coming out relatively soon. They released the album High Risk Behavior in 2020, and they've got a tour this spring. And actually, this tour will be their long-delayed tour that was supposed to be with Mean Gene's since before COVID. So the Chats actually were on a momentous rise just before COVID. They had this huge tour lined up. And, oh, actually, that's right. I saw the Chats on the before the big explosion tour when they were playing small clubs. Then there was the big Chat explosion, which seemed very tactically planned, which I don't even necessarily mind. But then that got derailed by COVID. So two questions here, or maybe even three questions. First question is, did COVID kill the Chats' rise to massive stardom? B, how come no one commented that one of the main Chats, I mean, there's only three Chats, and one of the Chats guys is gone replaced by a new dude? And also, well, it's question three, is if we look at the new Chad's video, the kind of white trash Aussie look has been totally toned down, and it kind of looks like three young guys rocking out now, where they used to be kind of three purposely tacky 80s looking kind of guys. And D, did you like the track? And more, answer all four.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they didn't get rid of one of the guys. I thought they did. Oh, they did. Okay, yeah.
I'm pretty sure they did, because he doesn't look like the same.
Yeah, I'll look it up while you keep talking.
All right. So the first one, do I think the party's over? Or did COVID kill the momentum? I don't think that COVID killed the momentum. I think it kind of happened at a strategic point, because, you know, then they got to take a break from touring and kind of like recharge and stuff. And now they're heading out on, like a pretty extensive tour. You know, so they're going to be like rested up and ready to go and just like bursting with energy and wanting to create and wanting to play and wanting to do all of that. So I think that they'll get the momentum back and then some when like they start playing again. For sure. The guitarist,
it has changed. It used to be a guy called Josh Price.
Yeah.
Now it's a guy called Josh Hardy. So they're both Joshes.
Maybe that's why people didn't notice. They have the same name. But yeah, like that was kind of interesting. I think in AC/DC CD, that was when, I'm pretty sure in that one he was in that, the new guitarist. Because I watched that video today too. I'm pretty sure they looked similar. The change of style. I liked the mullet. I liked that kind of look. I thought it fit them really well, and I thought it like went with their image and went with kind of all that kind of stuff. So I'm not the world's biggest fan, but it's all good. I wonder if that'll like have an effect on their fans. You know, like how they behave. Maybe not. Just have to see. Yeah, I liked the song. I thought it was good. It was more like it sounded a little heavier, which I liked. The video was really good. So like their practice space gets hit by totally real lightning. And then they're playing the song, and during it, the lead singer gets again zapped by this lightning. And then the guitarist is like held up with like four different bolts, and he's playing, and it's nuts. And then it ends with the drummer getting struck by lightning and just like turning into a skeleton. And I thought that was really funny. So yeah, I think they will continue their rise. Hallie, what did you think?
I liked it. This is my question for you. Okay, so the other two dudes get struck by lightning, and like it just like kind of like it doesn't really affect them, or it just like makes them rock harder. And then like the drummer gets hit by lightning, and he turns into a skeleton. So is that just like, are we just talking like, is this like a just like the drummer dies kind of joke, like a Spinal Tap thing? Like, doesn't one of the drummers in Spinal Tap, didn't he get struck by lightning? Like, isn't that a thing in Spinal Tap? Anyhow, or does the lightning, does it kill him because he stopped playing? Because it happens at the end, like his arms, like it happens at the exact moment that his arms stop moving. Anyhow, I don't know. I thought it was funny. I liked it.
Did you guys like that the physical 7-inch version has Joe the Camel on it? Hallie Bullitt, do you miss Joe the Camel?
No, not a bit.
And more, do you even know who Joe the Camel is?
Yeah, he's the cigarette guy. He had a movie.
He did?
Right? Yeah, wasn't that the Joe the Camel guy? Like, I know the cartoon, like, on the package, but, like, I remember watching a movie when I was really young, and it was, like, a 3D animated camel. Maybe there's a Joe the Camel movie.
I'll have to look that up. I enjoyed Joe the Camel. Not only did he try to get children to smoke, but he was always up to cool stuff, you know, like shooting pool or riding around on yachts. I miss the Joe the – I mean, I don't smoke myself, but I always thought Joe the Captain was pretty cool.
Wasn't he also, like, dirty or something? Wasn't he also supposed to be, yeah, like, boobs or a vagina or something? What was he supposed to be? A penis? What was he?
He was?
Yeah.
Wait, really?
You have a filthy mind.
No, I'm pretty sure.
Let me look.
Wasn't it like if you looked at him the right way, he was like something dirty?
Oh.
No, he looks like a camel to me.
Wait.
Maybe.
Are you Googling it, Sean? I swear. I swear he was supposed to be something dirty. Okay, never mind.
Oh, here's an ad I remember quite well. Smooth character. It's Joe the Camel smoking at a casino. Man, if only I could be like Joe the Camel. If only I could have my life together like Joe the Camel. Listen, here, struck by lightning by the chats. Don't smoke, kids. It's bad. And we're back. Let's talk about something where there certainly will not be smoking or any other illicit substances. Limp Bizkit is going on tour. And you say, John, why are you talking about Limp Bizkit at Punk News? I thought it was Punk News. Because Limp Bizkit is touring with some notable hip-hoppers, but also some very notable up-and-coming hardcore punkers. Opening for Limp Bizkit is Snot, the rapper, not the alt-band, Wargasm, and Scowl. And so the question is, not is anyone going to go see Limp Bizkit, because they're a terrible band. They always were terrible. And some, they're kind of like, I notice right now a lot of people like are kind of like, oh, Limp Bizkit was actually kind of fun. They're bad, but they're fun. No, they're bad. Limp Bizkit is bad. It's not fun. It's not ironic, it's bad. However, Scowl is opening, and I almost said, oh man, I'm going to have to go pay see Limp Bizkit just to see Scowl. But Scowl actually announced a tour, so I'm going to go see that tour instead, and I won't have to go see Limp Bizkit. That being said, is this a waste of Scowl's time? And more, is this beneficial? Like, will most people at Limp Bizkit care about Scowl, and will that make them Scowl fans? Or is it a misdirected point of energy? And also, isn't Scowl awesome, or do you hate Scowl?
I love Scowl.
Do you love Limp Bizkit?
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus, no. I didn't know they were still around. I didn't know they were still putting out music. And this was kind of a shock. No, I love Scowl, and Dying Wish are awesome. And Wargasm is also really, really good. So that's what I was trying to figure out, like, earlier, is why they're on the tour. You know, like, what's the connecting line? Like, immediately I go to, like, this is great because they're playing arenas and they're playing these massive, like, places. And, you know, like, Scowl deserves all the fans. You know, same with Dying Wish and Wargasm. I don't know about the other two, Young Gravy and Snot. I don't know about them. But those three definitely do because they're awesome. So from that standpoint, like, you know, it'd be so cool for people to go, and, you know, I don't know what a typical Limp Bizkit fan is, but, you know, they'd be exposed to something maybe they aren't exposed to, and they might really love it, you know, and it's just great to see awesome young, like, up-and-coming hardcore bands, well, any bands, get this exposure and get these opportunities. And it is an interesting lineup. Like, there's a pretty cool, like, mix of things. So that's something that I think we're going to be seeing more, is more, like, kind of difference in genre. But yeah, like, it is just kind of strange. Just, yeah, here, awesome bands, go out, go play, and then Limp Bizkit's gonna come on and do whatever it is, like, We All Suck or whatever. Like, why? Hallie, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's cool, you know, my first, like, mental and emotional reaction was just like, oh, this would never, ever, ever have happened, even, like, 10 years ago. Just, like, a band like this with, like, a woman in it, they would just, like, never get asked to do a tour like this with a big doodly band like this. So that seems like progress. That seems cool. I'm not sure exactly what they'll get out of it. I don't know if they're going to get a bunch of new fans. I hope it's not, like, a sucky experience for them, as we like talked about on the podcast before. Sometimes when you're the opening band, especially if you're doing something a little bit different from the headliner, it can be like a little rough. But I mean, at the very least, they got to be getting paid well, and they can like take all that fucking dough and just like put it into some cool shit. So I don't know. I think it's cool. And we've already spent so long talking about the comments, or so I hate to bring it back to this. I'll try to keep it quick, but I did find it so interesting that like all the commenters were like, you know, I gave that new Limp Bizkit record a listen. It wasn't totally for me, but it's like, why are you open-minded to this? Like, every other fucking thing that is not just, like, three-chord punk rock, you're going to, like, tear it apart. But, like, somehow this, you're like, I don't know, I gave it a listen. I thought I'd just, like, give it a try. Like, now you're Mr. Open-Minded. It's just, like, it drove me crazy. It's, like, very clear to me that, like, these people just have to be white guys, middle-aged white guys. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no reason that they'd be so fucking open-minded about, like, I'll just like, why not? Just give that Limp Bizkit record a spin. What, you know, it's like, it's because you were like, that was the era that you were like coming of age, and you have some fucking weird guilty pleasure. Like, you like it. Like, you like, I don't know. And it's terrible music. I don't know. That's all I have to say about it. John, help.
Limp Bizkit is bad, real bad.
It's
bad. I mean, you know, not everything that was around when you were in middle school and high school means it's good now. It's bad. It's real bad. For example, I recently acquired 3 Ace of Base 12-inch singles. Kind of good. Kind of good.
Yeah.
Limp Bizkit, real bad. Real, real bad. It's a bunch of dork ass, you know, beardo loser punks that have never done anything in their life. You just suck ass, you know, whatever. But honestly, like, we spend way too much time on them. You go to the cool punk shows, they're not at the cool punk show. You know what I mean? So screw them, whatever. Yeah. Let them rot, you know. Let Emma kick them into their grave, and that's what she's doing.
Yeah.
Here's an old school punk rocker that is still kicking ass. I'll just be brief about this unless M or Hallie have a comment. Steve Ignorant has released a David Bowie's cover EP. It's actually Steve Ignorant's Slice of Life, which is his acoustic band. It's a 4-track, 10-inch EP that benefits London's Way Out Radio, and it's out via the benefit label Stay Free. I got it in the mail actually just yesterday, and I bought it, but I'm like, it's not going to be that good. It's like, if the listeners don't know, the band Crass took their name from the Ziggy Stardust song, The Kids Were Just Crass, that's the lyric. And that's one of the very few things that Steve Ignorant and Penguin Bell of Crass could connect on. They both like David Bowie. The perhaps simplified but funny perspective of Crass is that Steve is the working class guy that likes punk rock and glam rock and good rock, and Penguin Bell is the highfalutin abstract artist guy that likes, what does he call, progressive classical, which as Steve Ignorant describes as the sound of furniture being thrown down the stairs. And so, and honestly, that is an oversimplification, but I love that dynamic of the band. But it's cool that David Bowie is something that they both connected on. And so it's fitting that, you know, Steve Ignorant, who's now in his 60s, goes back and does a David Bowie's cover EP. And it's cool that it benefits a London radio station. Unlike Joe Strummer, who said he was going to set up a pirate radio station, but then didn't, then another Crash Clash connection. At any rate, I bought it because I want everything Steve Ignorant, but I'm like, you know, it's just going to be acoustic. It's going to be kind of crappy. And I played it, and it is awesome. It is like really, really awesome. I've played it probably 5 times. And what if, like, Steve Ignorant is one of my favorite punk singers ever. However, Steve Ignorant is not a Freddie Mercury. He's got a limited range. So I thought it would be kind of bad or even silly. Like, weirdly, Steve Ignorant, like, lots of people have covered Bowie and they kind of, like, oversell it. Where Steve Ignorant kind of, he sings as Steve Ignorant, he undersells it. But then he does something quite masterful that I don't think I've ever heard anyone ever do covering Bowie before, is he kind of nails these tiny Bowie inflections that you don't really think about until you hear Steve covering it, and you're like, wow, Bowie does these unique things that no one else does, and Steve recognized that and is kind of pointing that out by redoing it. Luckily, Ziggy Stardust actually does have an electric guitar. The other songs are Sweet Things, 5 Years, and London Boy is kind of an obscure early track. And honestly, it is awesome. It is just awesome, and it's – so fun as a fan of a, it's so awesome when a band, like, the fact of the matter is, when you're a fan of a band a long time, not always, but a lot of time, their later day stuff is good. It's like, eh, but if it wasn't that band putting that out, would you care about that? The answer is maybe not. This is just awesome no matter how you do it, and it's so rad that Steven Yeun of Crass is still putting out awesome music, and he takes some hits, and people say, oh, he shouldn't do Crass music, or he shouldn't even do music. But I think it's so rad that Steve Vignorant is doing the Steve Vignorant thing, and he did an amazing job on this, as did the band. And so this is just a very cool little curio that's not getting repressed. So I hope they make the tracks digital, and it's very awesome. I don't know if Hallie or Emma have any perspective on it.
No, I mean, I did not realize that before, like, reading up on this release. Like, I did not realize that Crass got that, that was where the name came from. I thought that was so fucking cool. And like, yeah, I don't know. This sounds really amazing. Like, I found myself like, I like had a thought and then got embarrassed in front of myself. Cause like my first thought was like, how am I supposed to listen to this? Right, John? Cause it's like, you can't find it online anywhere. Right. Or, am yeah. I, or is there,
it,
yes, you can't.
No, it's physical. I wish they would make, if it's a benefit, make it digital. I say right now it's physical only and it's sold out.
Yeah, but I love, like, I had this thought of, like, well, what the fuck, man? Like, how am I even supposed to listen to this? And then I was like, oh, right, dummy. Like, you're supposed to buy it. You know, like, I hate that I've, like, fallen into this thing that we all have now where I'm just supposed to be able to, like, have the world at my fingertips for free. But, yeah, I would love to listen to this. I think it sounds awesome. Yeah, I don't know. Bullshit.
I'm looking at the record right now. If people bought David Bowie's final record, Blackstar, an amazing, amazing release, there are codes all over the record and the Matrix on the cover and all over. And apparently, according to the jacket designer, there still are codes that people haven't broken yet in the record. I think one thing is, like, if you hold the record up against a black light, like there's tiny stars in the black vinyl itself or something, it's very cool. So if you don't have a physical copy of Blackstar, Bowie's last album, which is an amazing album, everyone should get it. I'm looking at the back cover of Steve Ignorant's Slice of Life. The black stars are on the back, and it is some kind of a secret code, because the first star is half white, half red, the second is all white, the third is half red, half white, and then the fourth is two-thirds white, one-third red. So that's some sort of a code. I don't know what it is, but that's kind of cool. People. Get it. So, yeah. Steve rules. Bowie rules. Two last stories, then we're going to wrap up today's episode. Pup put out a video. And more, tell us about Pup's new video.
Yeah, so Pup released a video for Totally Fine. And it is one of the best videos I've watched in a really long time. I love this video so much. So, like, for the unraveling of Pup the band, what they've been doing with, like, all their marketing stuff is, like, making, like, we are Pup the Band, Inc., and just kind of, like, buy our corporate package and kind of stuff like that. So, like, they've sold out kind of thing, and they're corporate now. And that's what the video kind of is them, like, quitting DIY punk and how is it termed, like, going corporate isn't selling out or something. So, like, they all have different names. Like, Stephen Babcock is Stephaniel Bobcat and, like, all this kind of stuff. So, there's Black Turtlenecks. There's Motivational Speaking. There's really, really funny news headlines. And the ticker tape at the bottom of the – when they show the news is really funny. There's so much going on. They get kind of stalked. They go to court. They're found not guilty. And then they go to, it's like, not guilty. We're going to fucking space. And then they're in, like, these giant spacesuits and they're playing. And it's great. It's awesome. And then in the credits, too, there's, like, it starts with based on the disturbing best-selling novel, Company Band Goes to Space by Clementius Hewan Murder. And there's a suitcase baby, and the name is Plastic Jensen. Spaceships were provided by NASA. Graflar gets a shout-out, like a special thanks. And then after the credits, there's like a little bit with their like their drummer walking around, and he has a briefcase, and he's kind of doing a deal, and then there's like seals, film festival seals flash, and like quotes like unparalleled cinematic storytelling and all this kind of stuff. If they ever made that a movie, I would watch it like 100% because that was so funny. And I am sure I missed so much. I watched the video, I think, I watched it twice today, and so much I missed. And it was just like, I love the video, I love the song, and it's like, the last time we talked about Pup, I was really conflicted because I really don't like Robot Writes a Love Song. I can't make myself like it. I tried. I can't. I don't really like Matilda. I don't really like the videos for either of them. This one, well, I mean, I like the Matilda video. The Matilda video is good. But this one was just like, everything was there. And it was like, Pup is back. You know, the disconnect is gone. You know, I wanted to listen to this multiple times. And I did. And it didn't have like the dread with it, like with the, that sounds really dramatic, but with like the other two singles, it's like, I don't want to hit play. I don't want to hear this. And then this is like, yeah, more of this. So, yeah, I'm still very conflicted about the album. But I know there is some good stuff. Hallie, what did you think?
I loved it. I thought this video was great. And I really thought, like, it had some pretty great performances from the band, right? It's, like, fun to get them, to see them, like, really, like, do characters and kind of do something really outside of, like, how we normally see them. And, like, especially Stefan as, like, this sort of, like, business magnate, like mega ambitious technologist kind of character, like, you know, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs kind of character. And then, like, there's like a shot of him in like a black turtleneck. He's wearing like a full length fur coat. Ooh, it really made me giggle. That really made me laugh. Yeah, I liked this. I mean, I'm personally finding, like, with a lot of their new stuff, that I really enjoy it when I'm like watching it in the video, and then I just don't feel compelled to listen to it again. And I don't know if that's just because, I don't know why that is. But I really get a kick out of watching this video and listening to this song. It's cool, cool shit. John, did you like it?
I like the video a lot. I love anything that it. One of my pet peeves of comedy is when people do comedy with. An intention of hate or smugness. And here, the main guy is Stefan. He's the singer of Pup, right? Stefan?
Yeah.
He's clearly busting on Steve Jobs, and I am not a Steve Jobs fan, but I just loved it. I loved it so much. I'm like, you know, Hallie was right in that, like, he is a great actor in that, like he's doing all these very physical gestures, and he's like dancing on stage and stuff, like at like a press conference, and like it really is making fun of bro tech technology, or, you know, startup technology, or even high tech Bay Area technology. So I just thought that was great. And I also thought it was quite poignant how in the movie, or the video, Rob, the movie, in the movie, this research journalist like cracks the code, but in the end, the evil tech corp wins anyway, and nothing bad happens to them, which I think was sadly poignant. Mm-hmm. So I think this video is a fantastic video. As to the song is fine. I enjoyed it. It didn't make me want to run out and buy the track. The band's not necessarily my style, but I thought the video was great, and I think the song is good. It didn't win me over as to the band, but I'll watch the next video, that's for sure. Here is a video that did win me over, and then we'll wrap this on up. Lezibu Grand have released a new video. The video is for Exercise, and as of right this moment, there are exactly to the nearest one, 228 views of this video, and it's been out for about 2.5 weeks, which is a tragedy and a disgrace upon the art-consuming public, because the video for Lezibu Grand's Exercise is absolutely fantastic. It's one of the funniest videos I've seen this year. And to be fair, what it is, it's the singer. And more, is Lezibu Grand a singer or a band?
They're a band.
So what's the singer's name?
Her name is Tyler Simone Moulton.
So Tyler is doing kind of like a faux cheesy 80s workout video, and it's been done before, but you know what? It works every time, and it's hilarious every time. And I absolutely love this video. The song itself, I think, is really, really good too. Hallie Bullet, you might concur with me. This song reminds me a lot of the Talking Heads, but not really the Talking Heads. More Tom Tom Club. This sounded very much like a Tom Tom Club track to me, which is very positive in my book. It's kind of a funky beat, but it's almost like a background beat, and then it's got the singer just like saying not random words over the top, but sparsely percussive words over the top. And Tyler was her name, M.
Yes.
Yeah. So also the song is a double and entendre. And it is blatantly a double entendre. Like there's no entendre about it. It's just, you know, it's a song. I thought this track was great. I thought it was funny. And I think the song in and of itself is really good. And honestly, I don't know if they have an album out or an EP or what.
They've just been releasing like a slew of, like, they've come out with like 3 singles in the last like month, I think.
They released a bunch of singles in 2021. And then this one, I think, is their second or third this year. Yeah. They do have a full length album called The Legend of Miranda. And I'm pretty sure that was 2019. So right now they're just releasing singles, but, I think there's going to be more.
At any rate, I thought this video was fantastic and funny and cool and good. Em or Hallie, what's your take on it?
Go ahead, Em.
Okay. I love this. I think this is great. And 100% agree. Like, this band needs so much more, like, so many more views, so much more traction. Like, every time they put something on, I'm trying to get it in. And, you know, they're so good. Like, they have such a good energy, and their visuals are always, like, just on point, like, with the song, and, just the video is perfect, and it goes along so well with the lyrics, and it's just this fun, just mash of everything, and it, like, it's motivating somehow, too. It's just, it's great. I can't say enough about it, and I'm really looking forward to, hearing more from them, seeing more from them, as the year goes on. Hallie, what did you think of Exercise? Yes.
I mean, I like this band. I just think they do interesting stuff. I always like the things that they're sort of referencing and like pulling from in their music, because because I liked like 80s new wave so much, and that's obviously such like a huge influence for them. So I this track was like a little bit like, it was a little bit too jokey for me or something. They've had a couple other singles out recently. I think I prefer, like, they just released a tune called I'm Not Sorry. It doesn't have a video to go with it, but it's like really nice. It's very like Amy Mann meets like Howard Jones, kind of 80s new wave. Em, were you going to say something about it?
Nope. Just 1 minute.
Oh, okay. I like that one, but honestly, I like the new stuff they've been putting out. But to me, if I really want to rock out to this band, I still go back to some of the older stuff. I like We Fucking Suck. I like Hush Hush. Yeah. I like some of the stuff that they put out earlier. But yeah, I think this band is cool. And I also like have that thing where I just sort of wish I wonder what kind of following they have locally, you know? They're from Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
I always wonder, like, what if their shows are well attended. I just think they're doing something really interesting, and would also like to see them get a little bit more recognition.
Well, there you have it. It's actually Le Cebu. Le Cebu? Oh, give me a second here. I was pronouncing it incorrectly. It is Le Cebu Grand. Le Cebu Grand. Le Cebu Grand. Le Cebu Grand.
Keep practicing, John. You'll get it.
Le Cebu Grand. Anyway, they're cool. Let's play a song by Le Cebu Grand. We'll do Exercise, and we'll be right back.
Feel that beat.
And we're back and we're wrapping it up. And more. We're back in full power. Full control.
Woo!
Don't get stop us now.
Are you yes. Right? I am pumped. Yes. And
any last words for the listeners about Lacey Bougrand or anything else?
Give new music a chance because chances are it's really, really good and it'll kick your ass in the best way. Yeah.
And moving over to Hallie Bullet to close up. Hallie Bullet, should we give Joe Camel a second chance because he's been banned across the world or what?
No, I don't want to revisit Joe Camel. You can.
Any last words for the podcast listeners?
Yeah, you know, so I really like this band, the Ghost Wolves from Austin. They're just like a band that I got lucky enough to like. I played with them when they came through New York. Otherwise, I don't think I would know them. But they're just really cool and garagey, and they're just, it's worth checking out if you're interested. They're doing this cool thing. I guess they have like a band friend. Do you know what I mean? Like they have a band that they're friends with that's from Ukraine. And I guess this band is like seriously trying to like, they're like part of the fight in Ukraine right now. And so Ghost Wolves are raising money for their friends in Ukraine. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of a cool thing that they're doing, and you can check it out on their website, which is theghostwolves.com. And they made a video where they kind of explain how they know this band and what their friends are doing and what they need supplies for and that kind of thing. And you can donate if you're interested. It's just kind of an interesting combination of like, you know, punk rock fundraising and also helping Ukraine. So check it out.
And we will see you next week.